So the title, Y'all Better Quiet Down, we'll quickly see, comes from Sylvia Vera's speech, the 1973 Christopher Street Liberation Rally, which to me is a deeply meaningful day, and because it marked a shift from the Christopher Street Liberation Rally's roots. The first one took place outside of the Women's House of Detention Center, where people were chanting, "Free ourselves, free our sisters," as a way to create solidarity with people who are currently incarcerated in the Women's House of Detention Center, specifically members of the Black Panther Party. And then in 1973, the committee for the Christopher Street Liberation Rally wanted it to be a decidedly non-political event. So there was an enormous shift from whose voices and whose bodies were allowed on stage, and Sylvia Rivera got up on stage and demanded that, as one of the Stonewall vets and someone who helped create this movement for gender self-determination and queer liberation, that her voice be heard. So part of my talk was originally about tracing the neoliberalization of pride, which I'm really interested in and have spent a lot of time thinking about. How do we go from protesting outside of the Women's House of Detention Center to in 2000, and nine, having Christine Quinn create a task force to bring tourists to New York City, and you know, as a way to get money and create a queer pilgrimage. It's an enormous shift. So that's what I was going to talk about today. But then on Wednesday, something really powerful happened. How many people in the room have heard of C.C. McDonald? Great, so about half the room. C.C. McDonald is a young Black transgender woman who lives in Minneapolis, and on June 5th, 2011, was attacked by this person, Dean Schmitz, and a group of other white people in a homophobic and a transphobic way. She fled from her attacker, but ended up killing Dean Schmitz. And on Wednesday, she decided to go for a plea bargain. It's something that a lot of us in the movement for gender self-determination and also for self-defense had been doing a lot of organizing support for. This is a person who was living and navigating many layers of being criminalized, right? By race, by gender, by class, because she was trans, because she was also queer. And her trial started on April 30th, and then she chose to accept a plea bargain to go down from second-degree murder to second-degree manslaughter, which carries a 41-month sentence. So that gave me enormous pause coming into today and thinking about whose voices and whose lives are held within the mainstream LGBT movement. Just like Sylvia Rivera demanded that folks better quiet down, and we're going to listen to her talk in just a moment, C.C. McDonald's case demands that we as a movement quiet down and really examine our own principles, our political principles about whose lives matter, whose lives are deserving outrage around, and are deserving support. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show a couple clips. The first one of Sylvia Rivera talking about STAR, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. And then I'm going to read an interview between C.C. and Pretty Queer to really ground us in the enormousness of this case. And then I'm going to close with Sylvia Rivera's reflections in 1995, so some 20 years later, 30, something like that. Okay, I'm doing queer math up here. So this is Y'all Better Quiet Down.
Motherfucking week and ask for your help.
Yeah.
and you all don't do a goddamn thing for them. Have you ever been beaten up and raped in jail? Now think about it. They've been beaten up and raped after they haven't spent much of their money in jail to get their cell phone and try to get their sex change. The women have tried to fight for their sex changes or to become women of the women's liberation. And they write STAR, not the women's group. They do not write women. They do not write men. They write STAR because we're trying to do something for them. I have been to jail. I have been raped and beaten many times by men, heterosexual men, that do not belong in the homosexual shelter. But do you do anything for them? No, you all tell me to go and hide my tail between my legs. I will not no longer put up with this shit. I have been beaten. I have had my nose broken. I have been thrown in jail. I have lost my job. I have lost my apartment for gay liberation. And you all treat me this way? What the fuck's wrong with you all? Think about that. I do not believe in a revolution, but you all do. I believe in the gay power. I believe in us getting our rights, or else I would not be out there fighting for our rights. That's all I wanted to say to your people. If you all want to know about the people that are in jail, and do not forget Bambi L'Amour and Dora Marks, Kenny Messner, and other gay people that are in jail, come and see the people at Star House on 12th Street, on 640 East 12th Street, between B and C, apartment 14. The people that are trying to do something for all of us, and not men and women that belong to a white middle class, white club. And that's what you all belong to. Revolution now! Give me a G! Give me an A! Give me a Y! Give me a P! Give me an O! Give me a W! Give me an E! Give me an R! Give me
So, this was a really powerful day, not just because the Christopher Street Liberation Committee decided to not allow Star and Sylvia to speak on stage, but it was also a day that the Lesbian Feminist Liberation decided to protest trans people being included in Christopher Street Liberation, and is one of the first times that it was ever so public, the kind of interclashes between Lesbian Feminist Liberation, STAR, the Gay Activist Alliance, and the kind of transphobia that allowed for trans people like Sylvia Rivera to be kicked out of the movement and for our lives to not be held and supported. And then moments later, Gene O'Leary, who is the president of Lesbian Feminist Liberation, goes on stage to call Sylvia Rivera man. And protest trans people being included as a mockery to women. And it's complicated because the Gay Activist Alliance was an incredibly misogynist space, so it made sense that people would form and split off of the Gay Activist Alliance. But the way that they did it, I'm constantly in conversations at Sylvia Rivera Law Project and at Queers for Economic Justice, the way that we resist is as powerful and as meaningful that as the fact that we're resisting, right? So if we're resisting in a way that oppresses other people, we need to stop and think critically about that. Tom, what has really stunned me about your story is the community's support. It seems like people all over the country are paying attention to the case. Cece, yes. And I was wondering, is that something that you feel is true from where you're sitting, Do you feel that you're getting a lot of support and attention? Yes, actually, I was just talking to some friends yesterday about having this opportunity. Because a lot of people, especially in the African-American community, tend to just take what is given to them. When it comes to situations that put you in a predicament where you can't, you know, think and actually consider things. You know what I'm saying? You're pressured in jail. Jail will make somebody say, you know, whatever, just get me out of here. So all this support that we have now, not just from the LGBT community, but also the straight community, and you know, everybody now have some understanding of the issues that trans people face and that gay people face. You know how we are always singled out or just left with the worst possible decision from the pressure of jail. A lot of people don't really hear about that, or they just brush it off. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, it's another queer person, whatever. But it's deeper than that, because I am a person too. I feel like this opportunity gives me a voice, and not just a voice for myself, but for all people who have been through this. Well, yeah, that's the amazing thing. Your story, the actual events, unfortunately, it felt like another kind of tick mark on the box. Yes. So that's why it's been so amazing for me to watch, because it's been so well covered and so well documented. It seems like you have a huge network of support, people who are helping you. Why do you think your case was different? What's different about you? Because I had people in my life, the beginning, that felt that I had people in my life from the beginning that felt like the situation just couldn't go by without anything being said or without a fair trial. Because, like I said, many times when you are in jail, specifically with GLBT people, we tend to just take the deal that is given to us. Do you know what I'm saying? Tom. Yes. Cece. And a lot of people don't have time to think it over and consider the consequences or the alternative. So the people in my life, they, from knowing me, from moving up here, and knowing my story, knowing my history, they felt that this was worth the fight. I've come so far in my life, just to know that I might have be going through this, but there are people behind me, and that I do have options, and that I don't have to take what is given to me. I'm glad that I have that I have all these people in my life, because at the moment when it happened, I felt lost. I didn't know what to do. I was just a wreck. Luckily, I had these people there to piece me back together and to give me strength and tell me how to handle the situation. So who are these people? Can you name names, like just two or three of the most important people who changed the circumstances for you? One person, of course, was my case manager. Her name is Abby Beasley, and she used to work at a nonprofit organization called Safe Zone. I used to go there when I was younger to, you know, get on my feet and look for school and for work. And she was my permanent manager until the time when I was too old to have a case manager and be there. But she stayed in my life afterwards, and our friendship and our connection grew so much stronger. So, you know, when she heard the story, she got everyone involved. That's amazing. So there's someone who had previously been a service provider and then became a friend? And there are other people that are there other people that you knew from like your social life that have been people who have been really active in it? Where was your network of your support? Where'd that come from? My support came mainly from my family. Your family? Yes, mainly from my mom. She didn't live in the state and all my family lives in Chicago, but I keep in contact with my mom. And they were the people who gave me the inspiration to keep pushing, keep fighting, you know, keep faith, stay focused. I am most definitely glad that I have such a wide variety of people in my life right now that's supporting me, not just my family, but the organizations and the support from other people in other states. It gives me the motivation and the inspiration to, you know, have a voice and to fight. I can be the voice for a lot of people right now, and that's my main objective. I want people to understand that this is an issue and that, you know, our society needs to change so that everyone can live freely and happily. Everyone has their own life to live, and I'm just trying to live mine, just like everyone else, you know? Yeah, of course. So I was surprised that you wrote a letter to the local newspaper from jail. Yeah. How did you decide to do that? Well, I wrote the letter in an effort to challenge the tone of things as far as my persona and how I wanted people to view me. When this happened, I really didn't have access to the news. I was in seclusion. There was no TV in the unit where I was. I was basically in the hole. They said it was for my personal protection, but I doubt that. Right. I didn't have access to newspapers, so any media that was surrounding the situation, I would call people and they would say to me things like, yeah, they referred to you as a man, and they're just making you seem like a bad person. And I didn't want people to think that's who I really was. So in an effort to give people a clearer understanding of who I am and what happened, I didn't want people to think I was some delinquent, you know? I'm a college student. I have so many aspirations and things that I want to do in my life. I volunteer when I can. I do a lot of stuff involving the community. I help my family in any way possible. I try to be the person I can. I'm not going to say that I'm the best person, but you know, everybody has a learning process. I can say that the person that I am now is not the person they were showing in the media. You know what I'm saying? It was hurting me. I didn't want people to see me out in the street and turn their noses up because they had this idea of me from the media. It would be different if I was like, oh yeah, I'm an evil person, but I'm not like that, you know? And that's how they were making it seem. Did you have an attorney before you wrote the letter? At the time, I didn't have an attorney. Wow, okay. So did you consult with someone and say, you know, do you think that this is a good idea? What was your decision-making process around that? At the time, I really didn't think about any of that. Maybe I should have. But when you're in a situation where you're pressured and you're feeling lost and confused, when someone is slandering your name and you feel like you don't have a fair say, you're going to find a way to get your point across. So maybe if I had someone at the time to tell me, you know, you should do this and that, it would be different. But at the time, I didn't have none of that. How's my time? 5 minutes. Okay, all right. Okay, I'm just going to skip forward to have enough time. So Tom asks, what can you do to support the case? And Cece says, one thing you can do is go to the Support CC website. There's a list of events there. A lot of these events are dealing with white supremacy, LGBT rights, and just so much that's concerning this case. Not even just this case, but, you know, our well-being and our justice and how we're treated in our own communities and in society. Other than that, the love and support is all that I need. I never imagined that I would be in this situation. You know, I'm a very strong person. I've been through a lot in my life. And right now, I'm not giving up faith. With the support and the love from my family and the support of the rallies, the organizers, everything is positive. If you can show that you do care or that you are concerned, that would be great. If you can make it to the events, if you can just tell friends, tell someone, tell your next door neighbor, all that helps, all that counts. Tom, I don't want to sound cliche, but you probably get this a lot, but you're so positive and you're so strong. How do you do it? What keeps you going? What do you think it is that makes you so different? Cece. Growing up trans, you know, it's harder for you. It's obvious that it's being trans is harder. I grew up in the urban community. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and it's not easy. It's not easy at all, you know, to be yourself without getting harassed. I've actually been jumped a lot in my life, and I always blame myself for that. I always said it was my fault for being gay. It was my fault for being trans. I became suicidal and, you know, attempted but never succeeded. I've been through a lot in my life that made me suicidal and so depressed. But I had a couple of eye-openers that made me realize that I am loved and that I have a life and I'm human too, that I can do anything a straight person can. So that's what makes me so positive, not only for myself, but also the people around me. If you break that cycle, being bad or being down or being depressed, you know, you can change your life. Okay. And so now I'm just going to show the last...
Times that Marsha gives me a lot of strength is that I got to keep fighting for somebody. because Marshall was a fighter. We were both fighters, and I am a survivor. Marshall is not here to survive with me. Marshall, unfortunately, she passed on, but she's with me in spirit, and she gives me a lot of hope. Every time I look at that damn river and I sit there and meditate on the river, she gives me, I actually feel her spirit telling me, you got to keep fighting, girlie, because it's not time for you to cross
the River Jordan.
And we were supposed to cross it together.
You know, that's one reason the cops thought that she committed suicide, because she had been heard saying to somebody in a bar, cross the River Jordan. She said that five times a day.
For years.
Five times a day, every day of her life.
For years.
It was her favorite term.
There was an incident one time when I lived with her on 12th Street that she came in and she was at a dance. And her and Terry had to break down the house to her door because I had slipped my wrist. I had lost it. It actually was like the 4th anniversary gay march when I was beat up on stage by Vito Russo. Mama Jean told him to go ahead and do it. That's when Gino Leary got powerful and drag queens were no longer needed in the movement.
Gino Leary finally sort of had a scandalous end, you know.
Yes, I understand that, the old tacky bitch. I love her deal. But Marsha came home and she felt that I had done something. And I had the wall splattered with blood and whatnot. I got 60 stitches because I slid up. And she came home and her and Terry were actually the ones that had me sent to the hospital. And Marsha said, you're not crossing that River Jordan without me. Me and you and I will cross it together. And when she died, part of me went with her because one of our pacts was that we would always cross River Jordan together. And to me, this is the River Jordan, the Hudson River. And what I did in May to jump in the river in Yonkers and whatnot was that I was really at my wit's end. But then I realized that living again and being able to...
How did that happen to make the New York Times?
So the person interviewing her is Randy Wicker, who's an amazing trans and queer interviewer, videographer. And Sylvia goes on to talk about her life taking over the Christopher Street Pier, which is where this was filmed, and organizing with homeless people who were queer and trans and people with AIDS who were queer and trans, and pushing the gay community center, which was only a few blocks away, to take on issues of marginalized people, but specifically trans people, gender nonconforming people, people with HIV and AIDS, and people who are low income. So this is a presentation that similarly has no conclusion, but the time is up, and I'm really excited to engage with people on it.